So it's direct governance of this area. And the reason why is because this is where the Jewish population resided mostly here, and this is where the Jewish power base was as far as the aristocracy and the political and religious leaders in Jerusalem. And the Jews were a testy bunch for the Romans. The Romans granted them something they didn't grant anybody else. The Romans granted them religious rights. They could worship their God and only their God, and they didn't have to officially worship the Roman gods. And so the Jews were looked upon in a very odd fashion, and they really had a lot of friction with the Romans, and especially the Roman rulers did that there, governor. So he's governor of Judea for 10 years in this post. We don't really know anything about Pontius Pilate before this point. Most of what we know about Pontius Pilate, most come from the Bible. Also, other historians of the first century, Philo and Josephus, and then some secondary sources talk about him. We know some things that happened to him when he's ruling in Judea. There are some legends about what happens to him after he leaves this post. And a lot of them are very fanciful. He ends up in the caves with Christians in Rome and all kinds of crazy legends like that. And there's no substance to these kinds of things. But we do know from several incidents recorded by those in the first century, even outside the New Testament, that he clashed a lot with the Jews, especially over sensitivities regarding their laws, their religion, their customs, and so forth. For instance, he had some Roman soldiers carry ensigns in, which are these banners that the Jews would consider to be idolatrous, and that really troubled the Jewish people, and they had a fight about that. And oftentimes Pilate would sort of give in. But we also know that he could be brutal. There's a reference to this in Luke chapter 13, verse 1 and 2, where it says, there were some present at the very time who told him, speaking of Jesus, about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. So there was a group of Galileans, and there were all kinds of rebellious bands of Jews that would rise up against these Romans, okay? Either out of religious motivation or sometimes just out of political motivation. And to punish some of these, I guess you could say, testy Galileans who were Jewish, he slaughtered them somehow in conjunction with their sacrifices. So he mingled their blood with their blood sacrifices. Don't know the details of this, but it shows that something very brutal happened to them at the hand of Pilate. So that's who we're dealing with. This is at a time in Roman history when they were humming. And so the kind of man that they would put into a hotbed of controversy, like Judea was, he would be good at this. He would be politically savvy. He would know how to handle difficult situations, sensitive situations. And he'd be the kind of person that if he needed to bring the hammer down, he could do it. And he did it. And so he had a lot of flexibility. But he was ultimately responsible to Caesar. And that factors in even to what you see here in the Gospels. So let's look at two texts. All the Gospels talk about Pilate. We're going to focus on two. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 27. First of all, but spend most of our time, we want to hit this fairly succinctly, and then spend most of our time in John, because that's where the real interaction is. Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 and 2. Ray, can you read that for us? Verse 1 and 2 of Matthew 27, beginning of the chapter.
When morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate the governor.
All right, thank you. We studied the other day about Peter's denials. So Jesus is in Caiaphas' headquarters. He's first been tried by Annas, the former high priest. Now he's with Caiaphas. And this is where he had the Jewish trial, and they condemned Jesus to death. But under Roman occupational law, the Jews had local governance, but they could not carry out capital executions. They couldn't carry out death penalties. And they wanted Jesus dead. So they take Jesus to Pilate. So Ray, read for us verses 11 to 26, will you?
Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "You have said so." But when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he gave no answer. And Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" But he gave them no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they had then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." Now the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then he released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified.
All right, thank you. So I want you to focus on Pilate. A lot's going on here, and certainly Jesus is the prominent figure in this reading. But I want us to look at Pilate, because what's happening in this study is that we're seeing Jesus through these people, whether it's the Samaritan woman or the rich young ruler or whoever. So when you look at Pilate here, as these things unfold, as they bring Jesus for his examination, and ultimately they want him to order his death, what do you make of Pilate in this text? What is revealed about him?
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and we'll look at the one in John 2. He seems to be a man that understands the law, and that, you know, evidence must support the accusations. And we don't see that much in this right now. It's cross-examination, though, but he does see enough that he knows Jesus was delivered because of the envy of the Jews. The Jews hated this man. And you say, "Why? What evil has this guy done? You know, what major laws has this guy broken?" So we see that he is a man, even though he is corrupt in some other ways, he does believe in the rule of law, which I think the Romans throughout their empire was. That Romans had, citizens had certain rights you couldn't violate. So that's what I see here, is that he understands the rule of law, and, you know, why? You know, I need to know, I need to have something. That's why the washing of his hands in a public way. Hey, I recognize this guy's innocent, so, you know, that'd be on you all.
Right. I mean, when you look at this, I was thinking as you were talking there, you know, at square one, he's seeing this correctly. He's seeing Jesus is innocent. He's not a threat. And he sees that the charges, you know, are inflated. They're not, they don't have a basis. And that he even is insightful enough to understand their envy is behind this. And so it's quite remarkable what he's able to do here. And it shows his competency, if nothing else. Anybody else? What stands out to you, Andrew?
In that way, he's a lot like Festus. When Paul's in front of him, he's like, there's nothing going on here.
Yeah. Honest evaluation. Yes, right.
Really a supernatural event involved in this, his wife's dream.
Right. Which contributed to what's going on in his mind. By the time we're finished with the second text, it's clear this man's on the spot.
Well, in this instance, even he was afraid to make a decision.
You do see that.
And you know Brother Claypool?
David.
Yeah. Well, many years ago. I heard him say one time that Pilate had a rubber back phone.
Okay. I think it's spot on. What's interesting, adding this to it, this was a man, by the nature of his position, who could make a decision, who could be decisive, who could be a man of action. If he was not those things, if he didn't have that capability, he wouldn't be in this job. This is one of the toughest governor jobs in the Roman Empire, by the way. But in this incident, he is Rome. And it's everything that's bearing down on him that's creating that. He's flying through a storm. He's not coasting here. This is all uphill in the situation. I want you to think about a couple characteristics. He's quite inquiring. This is seen in Matthew because he asks a lot of questions about Jesus regarding the, from a legal standpoint. We'll see it even more so in John when the questions appear to be even beyond just the kind of legal questions. And he's insightful. He understands the innocence of Jesus. He picks up on that. He's not a guy who can't think for himself. And he's picking up on the motivation of the Jewish leaders, which is out of envy. And he certainly has an awareness. I mean, Vince has referred to this a while ago. He understands what justice is. But he's not completely committed to it. There's been a lot made, I'm not going to get off too much on this, but been a lot made about postmodernism and relevancy and all that, moral relevancy. Listen, everyone, that's always been around. That's pre-modernism. It's pre-modernism, modernism, and postmodernism. And Pilate's a classic example of situation ethics. He's a classic example of, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Yeah, but what's right and what's wrong in this situation? And even the whole hand-washing thing that Ben's mentioned, I mean, it's sort of a farce. Because he's the ruler, he's the governor here, he's the judge. And it's a PR thing. You know, to try to, you know, it's not just for himself, to make himself feel better. It's he's trying to act like he has nothing to do with the corruption of all this when he's smack in the middle of it. He could have stopped it. But he's all, you know, so anyway, we'll see more of this in John. What does it appear to be that his motive is with Jesus? What's his motive? We know what the Jewish authorities' motives are. What's his motive, you see, Andrew?
His motive is the same as any Roman governor's motive. Is he a threat to Rome?
Right.
In this case, he's like, no.
Right. He's trying to keep the peace, keep order, keep Roman rule humming along. And in that regard, he accomplishes that. But he does it through very, wrong means. But I don't know how you can be in a high political position and not end up doing something like this at some point. Theoretically, it happens. I don't know if there's been one person of political influence I've ever learned about that didn't do something like this at some point. So it is. Hopefully, you know, it's easy to look at Pontius Pilate as this sort of odd bird in the Gospels. I want you to see he's not. He's not at all. Let's go to John, okay? Let's go to John and look at this text, which is a fuller text, and there's a whole lot going on here in John chapter 18. Let me say this as we're turning over there and finding the text in John 18. We're going to start at verse 28. That there is a... The Gospel of John is different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We commonly call the first three Gospels the Synoptic Gospels. They appear to lean on each other as far as source material. The events surrounding Jesus' trials and his trial with Pilate and the crucifixion are a little different. They're harmonious. I don't think they're contradictory to John. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke, things are recorded in a similar fashion with a similar purpose, and John's different. John's focus is a little different. So, and I'll point something out that's major regarding that focus. So let's read here. We start us off here and read John 18, verses 28, and read down to verse 40, the end of that chapter, please.
Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. Then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, of which he spoke, signifying what death he would die. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and your chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews? Then they all cried again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was their blocker.
All right, thank you. So in John's account up to this point, what parallels do you see with what we read in Matthew, which, by the way, is very similar to Mark and Luke? What's happening in both places, John and Matthew?
He tries to release Jesus and finds no guilt.
He finds no guilt in him, thinks he's innocent. And he would like to release him. And he's you know, wanting to do that here, talking about the tradition at the Passover. Are the Jewish leaders and even the crowd having anything to do with that? No, they want the opposite, right? They want Jesus done in. Now, up to this point, it's a very similar account, except what is different? What is present here that you don't see in Matthew and Mark? Especially there in verses 33 down to verse 38.
Conversation.
This conversation between Jesus and Pilate. So what's happening in John is that time is slowed down and more facts are included. More scenes are included. I mean, you know, you can take a movie and cut out several scenes and still get the gist of the movie. So John inserts some scenes, some dialogue that's not in Matthew, Mark, and Luke between Jesus and Pilate. It's fascinating. Just absolutely fascinating. Now, let's build on this. Look at the beginning of chapter 19. It says in the English Standard Version, then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, or scourged him. This was a horrific beating. Person's clothes were stripped off. The scourge was a short whip, leather strips. Embedded in the leather strips were bits of rock or metal. And they beat the person nearly to death. It made hamburger out of their back. And it was like the punishment short of death. And in addition to being taken and flogged, because Pilate is saying, are you the king of the Jews? Which means this has been referenced about Jesus, either by the Jewish leaders, and it was. But we understand that Herod had heard about Jesus. We understand that Jesus, by this point, has a reputation. And so Pilate has this loose understanding that somebody's claiming or somebody's saying that this is the king of the Jews, the real king of the Jews. And so that's why the conversation centers around that. And so look what happens in verse 2 of 19. And the soldiers twist together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. What are they doing?
Mocking.
They're mocking the notion that he's a king. And of course, you have to understand how disdainfully the Romans looked at the Jews, especially these common soldiers would have done that. Verse 3, they came up to him saying, hail, king of the Jews, and struck him with their hands. And Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I'm bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault, no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Now, we're told in the synoptics that Jesus was scourged. Here we have a more specific account of when the scourging took place and why. Even after this, Pilate, as we'll read in a moment, is still trying to release Jesus. He has him scourged, which is beaten nearly to death. Then, arrayed in all this mockery, parades him in front of everybody and says, "Behold the man." So, what Pilate is trying to do is satisfy the people's thirst for Jesus to be punished, short of killing him. I would propose to you he's also trying to build some kind of sympathy to say, okay, enough's enough. He's had enough. Look what has happened to him. Let's call it. Of course, that's not enough for these people, the leaders and the people. So this was a cruel, this is how savvy this guy is. This was a cruel but a calculated move to satisfy the leaders, satisfy the people, but not have to put Jesus to death. It's slick. It doesn't work.
Yes. I think his conversation in chapter 18 just kind of shows how jaded Pilate is.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, what is truth?
Yeah.
Like, he's surrounded by politics all the time.
Yeah.
And people that come before him are probably twisting their stories all the time. But I think Jesus is just kind of a breath of fresh air for him, because he's just 100% honest with Pilate the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not begging for his life or anything.
Yeah, right. He's not. You don't have any groveling, nothing like that. And I completely agree with your assessment of that, because all the other times Pilate asked Jesus a question, he waited for an answer. And the text shows an answer, except that's a couple times when he's not answering in front of the others, the accusers. Here, Pilate says, "What is truth?" He's not having a dialogue about this. That's a question, but really a statement. And there's that relevancy again. There's that moral relevancy again, like, well, what is truth anyway? And people are still debating that, right? You know, so Pilate is every bit of postmodernist, okay? But he's just every bit of human. That's what he is, most of all. That's a great comment. I want you to consider, as you look at this here, well, let's read the rest of the incident, and then we'll start looking at what's taking place. Let's pick up the reading here. Vince, would you read for us verses 6 down to 16. 6 to 16, please.
When therefore the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify, crucify." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was the more afraid. And he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "Do you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and I have the authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin." As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the place called the Pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold, your king." They therefore cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." And so he then delivered him to them to be crucified.
All right, thank you. Think about this characteristics list again here that you see. Again, he's very inquiring. Do you see a difference in the line of questions or do you see a difference in the questions that we saw in Matthew that he's asking and the ones that occur in John? What's the difference?
He seems to be trying to find out where Jesus is from one thing, and who he actually is. Because, you know, all of this commotion and all of this hatred has to come from somewhere, and he seems to be very curious about why they hate him so much.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. He seems to hate. I think what you see in the synoptics is sort of just like in an abbreviated account, just sort of the necessary legal questions. What has he done? That kind of thing. Here you're like, are you a king? You know, who are you? You know, don't you understand? I have the authority over you. It's like he's probing deeper in Jesus. And I think, Les, you're right that what's pushing him here are the circumstances. Why is this going down? Why are they wanting this man dead? He's really trying to get down to the bottom of it. Some really great questions, actually. I want you to see also, I think it says something about his personality. He can be very dismissive of what hassles him. Don't you get the sense that it's like he doesn't want to be bothered by a lot of this? The first thing he says is, see to it yourself in Matthew. You guys will take care of this. This is among you. This is a Jewish dispute. But see, they wanted him put to death, but it has to be a capital crime. It has to be something like murder, or most commonly, somebody was crucified who's challenging the Roman state, as in Spartacus, okay? So they got to make him a political threat. He makes himself out to be a king. He's, you know, you're no friend to Caesar if you let this man go. He's a threat to Caesar. Pilate didn't see him as a threat. So, but that's how they got to catch Jesus. So that's why it's going to be a capital offense. It's going to be crucifixion. That's what they're bearing down on. But Pilate doesn't want to go there. He's just dismissive. And, you know, he's a busy man, and he doesn't want to get tangled up into this. Even though he sees very soon into it that this is an innocent man. But he still would like for this thing to go away. And then there's his contempt for the Jewish rulers. And I would propose to you, in John's account, it starts with the fact that when they bring Jesus to him, that can't even come into his headquarters. Why? It's their custom that if they go into the headquarters of the Gentile ruler, Roman ruler, they'll be corrupted and can't eat the Passover. So he's got to go out to them. How do you think that went over with Pilate? I mean, you ever go see the mayor or some big CEO for a job, and it's like, I'm here in the parking lot. Why don't you come out here and talk to me? Like, that's going to go well, you know?
Yeah. It's the right way to start the day, too, because it's yeah.
early. It's early. It's early. I mean, this day starts off terribly for Pilate, and it just gets worse. I mean, really, think about it. And he really is more aggravated at the Jewish leaders than Jesus. As someone said, and I think they're right, one writer said he would probably prefer crucifying Caiaphas, not Jesus. And I think there's some truth to that. And sure enough, long after Pilate's gone, the Romans will come into Jerusalem and mow it down, level it. They've had enough with it. Enough with all the insurrection and just difficulties, okay? But the real fascinating aspect of this in John's gospel is this interaction between Pilate and Jesus. And the first thing you see is that Jesus really engages Pilate. Jesus doesn't say a lot in the Jewish trials. He's mostly silent. We know in Luke chapter 23, when Pilate hears he's a Galilean, he sends him to Herod because he's trying to make buddy-buddy with Herod. Herod's been dying to meet Jesus. He's heard about the miracles. We're told in Luke chapter 23, verse 9, he questioned him. Pilate questioned Jesus at great length, but he gave no answer. Herod wants something out of Jesus. Jesus gave him nothing. So the same day, within minutes apart, Jesus said nothing to Herod when Herod peppered him with questions. But with Pilate, Jesus talked to him. Interesting. Conversed with him. Now, what do you make of Pilate's questions? And we've already had Les was talking about, it's like he's trying to probe to understand what's really behind this whole situation. What else do you see in Pilate's questions, Joel?
Well, the first question is just to see if he's a threat to Rome.
Yeah, that's kingship. And I would propose to you that this kind of guy like this, he can sniff an insurrection 100 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
He's like one of these bears, and you leave your garbage can cracked. And that bear's 3 miles away. And here he comes. Okay? Sorry for those visiting with us. Don't get too scared. We've only had 2 bear sightings around the building in the last year. That's all. I'm serious. They've both been on Wednesday night, so you're good. Go ahead. You think I'm joking? I'm not. Okay, go ahead.
Not answering Pilate is unnerving him. This ain't normal behavior.
Yeah.
Especially if you think the guy's innocent. And you're trying to prove a case for the guy's innocence, and the guy's not talking to you. This is unnerving.
Yeah. Pilate's used to people groveling and cowering. He is used to Jews being difficult, because we have accounts of that with Josephus and Philo, and there's some Jews that really stood up to him, okay, and gave him grief. He's not used to this thing. He's not after Pilate. He's not trying to grieve Pilate for the sake of just being, you know, obstinate. But he's like nobody Pilate's ever met, but of course Jesus is always like no one anybody's ever met. That's the whole point, right, of that. Go ahead.
I do find it very interesting in all this that it seems that, I don't know, it didn't even, that it seems, I mean, Jesus has more respect for Pilate than Herod.
Yeah.
He's already called Herod a fox earlier in the scriptures.
Yeah, and the Jewish leaders. I think he shows more, if you want to call it respect, I think I'm on your wavelength toward Pilate than the Jewish leaders. But the
answer he gives them says that much.
Right.
Like,
they do.
You've got the power over me because it was given to you.
Right.
It's the guys that gave me to you that it's got.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I want you to think about now is Jesus' answers to these questions. And this is one good comment, and that is Jesus is actually giving answers, and he's not trying to trap Pilate or anything. He's just being honest, okay? But it's not quite what Pilate's expecting either, okay?
There's a little bit of a difference in that. When Jesus was before the Sanhedrin, he said, I spoke openly in the synagogue. You know, you can find out what you want to know from people who heard me, or you heard me yourself. Whereas Pilate would not have been there.
It's true. That's a good point. It's as if he knows the motives of the Jewish leaders. He knows how corrupt they are and wicked they are. He's not treating Pilate that way. He knows he's a sinful man, but he's not treating him with that he's got those kinds of motives with him personally.
Yeah, same way. Pilate doesn't have a reason to know what's going on here. The Jewish leaders should.
Yeah, right. All the scriptures and things like that. Yeah, that's right. They have a lot more accountability than Pilate does, because they should know the law. And the prophets, and everything they've been, they've been tug and war with Jesus for months now. So they heard him out. Pilate is not. I think those are really great points, the guy there. And what does Jesus appear to be doing with his answers with Pilate?
He's giving him enough information to understand what's going on, but not enough information. Make him throw the case out. Because the bottom line is, this case had to go the way it needed.
Yeah, it is.
The bottom line is, I'm not going to defend myself, because then God's plan would fail. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
He knows what Pilate has to do, so he makes it possible for Pilate to do it.
Right.
You were talking about, Pilate and his reaction to the Jewish leadership, too. They wouldn't come in because they didn't want to be unclean. They're demanding murder, but that's the thing that is getting in the way of them going, celebrating the Passover.
Yeah.
There's no problem with murder, dude. You just don't walk in the building.
Right.
He sees them as the hypocrites that they are.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. The hypocrisy is hip deep here. It really is. And what you said there is really great for us to frame that. Jesus is not defending himself, but Jesus is teaching. He explains the nature of his kingdom. He explains his identity. Yes, I am a king. That's why I've been born. But he's a king whose kingdom is not of this world. And he came, his mission was to bear witness to the truth. And Pilate, there's a higher authority above you. And it's really an act of grace that Jesus is trying to teach this man who's about to give the word for his death. It's not a defense, like Neil's saying there. It's not. It's a terrible defense if it's a defense. But it is what he always does. He's trying to enlighten people, teach them, reveal important things to them. And so really what you've got here is that you got Pilate on trial. Right? Isn't that the one who's really on trial here? It's not Jesus. And in Matthew 27, 22, in that reading, then watch Jesus. Pilate says to them about Jesus, says to the crowd, then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ? Yep, that's the question. He's posing it to them, but the real question is, yes, Pilate, what will you do? What will you do, Pilate, with Jesus who's called Christ? You know, of all the people that we've encountered, on the surface, it may appear that Pilate is the least relatable. He's not a commoner. He's not Jewish. He doesn't have this common religious background with Jesus like the rich young ruler or Nicodemus or something. And he's not in a position that just conjures up this sympathy like Jairus with his daughter dying or the woman with an issue of blood. He doesn't conjure up sympathy to the reader and those kinds of things. He's just the least relatable and the least, you would think, applicable. But that's so wrong. He's just like everybody else. He's got to make a decision about Jesus. Who is Jesus? That's it. That's the question for everybody. And Jesus was on earth and still is, right? And so, you know, and there's, you know, Pilate is having to wrestle with several things, okay? He's having to wrestle with what he knew to be true. What truths had he locked onto and he was dead on those truths? What were they? Jesus is innocent. He's actually being brought before me because of what reason? Envy of the Jewish leaders. But he's also struggling with external pressures. What are the pressures that build up?
Got to keep peace in his province.
Peace here in the crowd. There's about to be a riot. The crowd, the Jewish leaders, who actually on another occasion will actually complain to Caesar about Pilate, not about this incident, but another incident. They actually form a complaint. They'll submit a complaint to Caesar about Pilate. And then ultimately, if word gets back to Rome that he went soft on a potential threat to the Roman rule here, uh-oh, he really in trouble then. So he's got all this pressure. And he's also struggling with the price of belief. Now, you may think, well, belief? Freeing him in the face of this kind of political pressure and this political situation, he is going to have to recognize some significant things about Jesus to free. He's innocent. There is good in this man. And according to what everybody's been saying, there must be something to his teaching and his miracles. I mean, at some point, he's got to start embracing the true Jesus to free him. But to do that would mean an incredible price he had to pay. And that's why he's struggling with fear. I want you to go back to John 17 and watch this. Watch the vice tighten on Pilate. John 19, verse 7. The Jews answered him after he said, I find no guilt in him. We have a law. According to that law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. Which tells us he was afraid. And now he's what? More afraid. And then you have back in Matthew the message from the wife about the dream. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, where are you from? Jesus gave no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Pilate is squirming. He's feeling the pressure. In this text, it appears that he's feeling more the pressure than Jesus is. Jesus has already had his pressure moment, right? In the garden. And now he's resolved. As Neil was talking about, he's committed to the plan that's going to happen here. His death on the cross. And Pilate is facing fear. I really think we underestimate this. With this question, do I really believe in Jesus and all that means regarding how I am to follow him? Fear is one of the greatest obstacles. Fear of what's going to happen, fear of the consequences, fear of how I'm going to manage this. And you see in the end, Pilate is just reduced down to every other person who turns his back to Jesus. Andrew.
So he's gone on both sides here. On one side, he's just been told that he's said he's the Son of God by the Jewish leaders. And now he's had his wife tell him that she's been dreaming all morning. And he's Roman. That means, what's going on here?
Is this an omen?
And then on the other end, he knows that there's a riot, like the people in the city of Ephesus. Maybe he can get in trouble with Rome if there's a riot if he lets them go. So he's caught on both ends.
Yeah, I think one of the other accounts says he saw that a riot was about to ensue. That's over in Matthew's account. So it's pressure all the way. But like everyone else, he has to make a decision. And like everyone else, the things that are getting in the way are the things that typically get in the way. Okay, thank you so much for your attention and your participation.